from Ferguson to Ayotzinapa to South Carolina. This week is all about the bonds between people of color in the Americas. Also, D.C.'s home care workers are joining the National Fight for 15. Coming up next. And welcome to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition for April 9th, 2015 on WPFW Washington, 89.3, your station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. I'm Esther Verum. As always, we have a lot for you in this less than an hour, starting with an initiative for Black-Brown Unity. We're going to bring you excerpts from the program, a very historic program, actually, that was held Tuesday night at Howard University, from Ferguson to Ayotzinapa, a conversation between communities on state violence. The program brought together the Black Lives Matter movement and the families of the 43 disappeared students from the Ayotzinapa Rural School in Mexico. And later in the show, D.C.'s home care workers are joining fast food workers and other low-wage workers in the National Fight for 15. And we can't take calls today, but soon, right, Mike? Right, okay. So, but we'll start with a few headlines and happenings. The person who captured on video the killing of an unarmed motorist, Walter Scott, has come forward. Faden Santana, an immigrant from the Dominican Republic who works as a barber, told NBC reporters that he empathized with the Scott family when he decided to release the video.
I felt, you know, like I did the right thing with the family, and I believe that this can help other people, you know, this to, like I say, to not do this kind of stuff. Like I say, nobody's, you know, nobody have the right to take the life away, you know, nobody, like I say, without, for no reason.
In other criminal justice news, supporters of the imprisoned journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal are designating this Friday, April 10th, for a national call to action to save Mumia's life. Here in D.C., the action will be held at Freedom Plaza, 14th and Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest, from 12 noon to 1:30 p.m. Organizers say that this is a call for all concerned people to join in urging that the Department of Justice intervene in this crisis. This situation facing Mumia Abu-Jamal, who was recently hospitalized for a diabetic shock. On Saturday, marches will mark the one-year anniversary of the abduction of more than 270 girls in Nigeria by the militant group Boko Haram. Participants will gather at 2 p.m. at the Federal Triangle Metro stop and march to the U.S. Capitol. For more information, go to actforaccountability.com. That's A-C-T, the number 4, accountability.com. And in our culture and media moment, artists are invited to come out and hear about grants and commissions that will be available as part of the multi-million dollar improvements planned for Rhode Island Avenue. The meeting will be this Saturday at 10 a.m. to noon at the Rhode Island Row Community Room, 2300 Washington Place Northeast, and that's adjacent to the Rhode Island Avenue Metro. The meeting is sponsored by the Premier Community Development Corporation and features special presenters Lisa Richards-Tony, Interim Executive Director of the D.C. Commission on Arts and Humanities, as well as Tanya Jordan, Public Art Manager for the Commission. For more information, email pcdcward5@gmail.com. That's pcdcward5@gmail.com or call Hazel Thomas at 202-491-9245. That's 202-491-9245 about this important meeting for artists. And finally, WPFW is one of the sponsors for a screening and discussion of the movie Silenced, America's War on Whistleblowers. The screening will be this Saturday, April 11th, from 3 to 7 p.m. at the Goethe Institute, 812 7th Street in Northwest. And those are our headlines and happenings. When we come right back, Black and Brown Voices Against State Violence at Home and Abroad. Stay with us. This is On the Ground, your weekly show about activists and activism on 89.3 Washington. I'm Esther Avaram. Well, the program From Ferguson to Ayotzinapa, a conversation between communities and state violence, brought together the Black Lives Matter movement and the families of the 43 disappeared students from Mexico to Howard University on Tuesday evening. Moderating the program was Eugene Puryear from D.C. Ferguson and Maria Luisa Rosal from School of America's Watch. It also included the organization Mothers Against Police Brutality and families of Ayotzinapa's disappeared students. We actually have a whole hour show, which we'll have to feature in an upcoming slot on the station. But for today, we'll hear from parents and family members who traveled here from Mexico, family members of the missing students of Ayotzinapa. Anayeli Guerrero de la Cruz, Clemente Rodriguez Moreno, and Felipe de la Cruz Sandoval.
Please, please, welcome. Welcome them. Give a D.C. welcome. Come on, y'all.
Buenas tardes. Mi nombre es Anayeli Guerrero.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. I am a sister of one of the disappeared. The picture that is to the right is of some students that were disappeared on the 26th of September in Iguala, Guerrero. I have two other cousins that were also disappeared. This happened close to Itzla. And the only crime that they had was that they wanted to study at Ayotzinapa. We are here to visit the U.S. to inform people about what happened in Mexico. I arrived in San Antonio, and I actually met up with some African-American men, and it really helped me to realize how the state is killing people here and in Mexico.
Quizá muchos escuchen que nosotros hablamos y hablamos de la normal de Ayotzinapa.
When my brother entered the school, he really didn't want to be a teacher. When he started there, he started reading about political prisoners, and specifically Ms. Salgado and Gonzalo Molina. And he started to read, and it really changed his mind on being a teacher.
Y cambió su forma de pensar, y él se metió en la casa.
So he actually gave a quote on the 25th of September that really changed his way of thinking and is part of the school. It had to do with activism. And he told me that as students there, they were willing to give their lives to really make a change.
Y sobre todo una frase que él me dijo que este...
So specifically what he said is, wherever death is, they welcome it. As being a part of Ayotzinapa, they saw that wherever there was an injustice, you had to stop the injustice, or else you were perpetrating it yourself.
Pues, yo lo que no alcanzamos a entender es por qué precisamente.
And it's really mind-blowing to think of why these students were targeted, because they come here to become teachers, to be a better part of society, and the goal of the school is really to help the most impoverished rural people, and so that was their goal.
Y pues a nosotros nos queda bien claro que detrás de todo esto está el gobierno.
So what we are here for is to really inform everyone of what is happening. We are demanding justice for our family members, and as family members, we have the right to know what happened.
Y pues, nosotros tenemos...
One thing that is clear to us is that as long as we don't have the truth, as long as we don't have justice, there will be no peace for the government as well. We will continue to manifest ourselves, to protest, and really stand up.
Y pues, pues ya más o menos ya saben lo que ocurrió. Y...
And so, as family members, you all have heard what happened. We will continue fighting. We will continue searching for the truth. There's a big Mexican community in the United States, and so we ask that you unite with us to continue fighting. And we've seen, really, being part of this caravan, that our pain has become your pain, and there will be no peace until we find out the truth.
Pues muchas gracias por escucharnos.
Thank you.
Desde el 26 de septiembre, yo tuve una plática con él el 24 de septiembre, donde él me platicaba sus inquietudes. Él quería ser también agrónomo.
Good night, my name is Felipe Rodríguez Moreno.
Cristian Alfonso.
My son, Cristian Alfonso, was disappeared. On the 24th, I had a talk to him about kind of his life and what it is that he wanted to do. He, as well as being a teacher, wanted to dedicate himself to agriculture. He was really interested in traditional folk dance. And when he got to Ayotzinapa, he said, if, you know, I don't get to teach, I will be able to, you know, if not directly, teach my people about how to defend their rights, teach the kids about their culture, and really give back to my town so that they can learn.
Pues no sé qué tanto tiempo va a pasar, pero yo tengo la esperanza, y a mí me mantiene la fe, que mi hijo está vivo. Están vivos sus compañeros.
I don't know what will happen, but I have hope and I have faith that they are still alive, that he is alive and that his comrades are still alive.
Pues conociéndolo a ustedes, que también tienen casos diferentes, eso a mí me ayuda, me fortalece más, que no debo de parar, que debo de seguir adelante hasta encontrar la verdad.
In meeting you and meeting the different cases that exist, it gives me so much hope and so much fortitude that I can't stop, that I must continue until I find the truth.
Nosotros sabemos que fue la policía municipal, fue la federal, y fue el ejército que participó.
We know that it was the police, the municipal police, the federal police and the military that participated in this.
Pero con esta situación de Obama, que está mandando recursos para el gobierno mexicano, está comprando armas, está comprando equipo, adiestrando a policías.
And so with the situation that Obama is doing by sending money, by sending arms, by sending equipment, and by training the police.
Pero ¿quién tiene la culpa? ¿Tiene la culpa el gobierno mexicano y los policías son como un robot que los está manejando el gobierno?
And whose fault is it? It's the Mexican government's fault. And the police are just robots who the government tells them what to do and they do it.
Y pues ellos hacen lo que el Estado les manda.
They do what the state tells them to do.
Y ahora el gobierno quiere dar el carpetazo que nuestros hijos están muertos. Y nosotros sabemos que nuestros hijos están vivos, porque tenemos pruebas científicas. Nos sacaron el ADN a mi familia y ahí están demostrando que nuestros hijos están vivos.
And so the government wants to tell us that our children are dead, but we know otherwise. We have scientific proof. There was DNA tests done and we know as parents that they are alive.
Y están demostrando las 5 personas también de desaparición forzada, ellos también demuestran también que nuestros hijos están vivos, y eso a mí me mantiene firme, que debo de seguir adelante. Y si en este momento mi hijo me está escuchando, me están escuchando sus compañeros, los vamos a encontrar.
And there's also 5 people who did other investigations on the forced disappearances, and their conclusions are that the students are still alive. And so that makes me want to continue and continue fighting. And know, son, that if you're listening, if your comrades are listening, we will continue to look for you until we find you alive.
Y no, nuestro objetivo de venir aquí es para que ustedes nos apoyen en exigirle al gobierno de Estados Unidos que pare el Plan Mérida.
The reason why we're here, our objective, is that you can support us. We are asking the U.S. government to stop supporting Plan Mérida.
Los 43 normalistas lo estamos esperando en la Ayotzinapa porque las butacas están vacías. Lo estamos esperando pues en nuestros hogares con los brazos abiertos.
And for the 43 students of Ayotzinapa, we are waiting for them in Ayotzinapa. Their school desks are empty, our homes are empty, and we are waiting for them.
Y mi familia es su familia también de ustedes. Gracias.
And my family is your family as well. Thank you.
Observando lo fácil que es.
Everybody here that is of different races and colors, and to see that we are all here peacefully and at peace. The world would be a better place if we all really followed this and continued this. But because of capitalism and what it has brought us, things are different.
Queremos decirles que hay mucha similitud.
There's a lot of connections between what's happening here and the African American community. They've been supporting us from Ayotzinapa, and we've been very fortunate for that.
La convivencia que tenemos con la gente de...
In Guerrero, we have a long history of individuals from African descent. They've been an integral part of us. They have stood by us and we by them through injustice and human rights. And in coming to the United States, we are here asking you to help us to say that this needs to stop.
Lo que pasó en Ferguson, pasó en Iguala.
What happened in Iguala is what happened in Ferguson. It was by the police. The police in Ayotzinapa disappeared and they killed students. And we are clear that it was a state crime. We know that we will not stop. We will continue to fight until we know the truth.
Ahorita en el relato de Comfort, escuchaba cómo el gobierno de Estados Unidos...
So as Comfort was speaking, the same thing that's happening here is happening in Ayotzinapa. The government wants to tell us to stop. They don't want impunity. They want the case to be closed. And we are here to say that that will not happen, that we will continue to fight.
Cuando el procurador de justicia de nuestro país sale a dar a conocer su verdad histórica.
And so in Mexico, what would be equivalent to the Justice Department here, they gave their historical truth, but their historical truth only protects the criminals. As Comfort was speaking, the same thing is happening in Mexico. The U.S. continues to be corrupt and continues to not have justice, just as in Mexico. And who continues to suffer? The poor people, the people at the bottom. And so as it is a shared justice, we will continue to work together.
Después del anuncio del procurador, por suerte, nosotros como padres de familia...
So after the Justice Department came out and gave their version, we are lucky enough to count with the expertise of some forensic scientists from Argentina. And so we've been working together to find what is actually the truth.
Y con estudios científicos nos demuestran que el gobierno de México miente.
So as the studies have been done by this organization from Argentina, the studies really prove that the government has been lying.
Después de esto, vemos cómo...
So the Mexican government continues to defend the criminals. They do not accept the recommendation by the United Nations Commission on Human Rights, which states that the 26th, a crime was committed, specifically the crime of forced disappearances. The government has continued to deny this.
Hoy podemos decirle a ustedes y al mundo...
And so what we have found is that the historical truth that the government has given has actually been a historical lie. The Human Rights Commission did their own investigation where they have found different conclusions, and shortly they will have recommendations on what actually occurred.
Van a dar a conocer, pero ya salieron evidencias, fotografías, en donde el ejército...
So there have been different evidence. There's been pictures that have surfaced. The state continues to claim that the military was never involved in this. There are now pictures that directly link the military, especially the coronel, to these instances of forced disappearances. Sorry, colonel.
A pesar de la insistencia del gobierno en rechazar las recomendaciones de la ONU,
so as this investigation has been unfolding, the director has been harassed and he's been blackmailed by the Mexican government. But we know that this fight must continue. We ask that there be sanctions put on the government, not on the Mexican people or Mexico, but rather on the government. And we need to continue to fight.
¿Por qué nosotros exigimos esto? Primero, porque nos faltan 40.
So why is it that we need justice? We need justice because we're missing 43 students in Ayotzinapa, in the school, and in our homes. The crime that took place everything needs to be held accountable. They took one of the students, and while he was alive, they gorged out his eyes and disfigured his face. The reason why we need to continue to fight is because if we do not hold this accountable, it will occur once again.
Para nosotros es bien importante el que ustedes estén sentados escuchándonos.
And so it makes me really happy that you're all here sitting, listening to this with an open heart. What needs to happen is that the Mexican system, the Mexican government needs to be brought down. With the world order that currently exists, human rights violations continue to happen all over the world. With imperialism, the people at the bottom continue to suffer. The working class especially suffers the worst.
No necesitamos más pruebas para darnos cuenta de lo que estamos viviendo.
So there is proof, not just in Mexico, but also here in the United States, that the state is directly involved in what is happening. The world order, not just in Mexico, but everywhere else, continues to do this. While we protest, there's a time to protest and there's a time to do something. We need to do something and unite, because really, there's few people that are rich and there are millions that are poor.
Podemos decirle que por historia, el imperio llegó a estas tierras americanas a invadir.
So historically, imperialism came to this continent to invade, to take over our lives. It has happened before and it is happening again. It is happening all over the world where it is being exploited to other countries and other people. And the reason we have permitted it, what we are here to say is that the revolution in Mexico has begun.
Lo primero que hemos aprendido,
the people are rising up and we will be the ones to create the change.
Para poder nosotros hacer esto, hemos aprendido entre los mexicanos.
So what we have learned is that the color of our skin makes us no different. We are brothers and sisters, we are stronger. We have come from different countries here looking for refuge. And what has happened is that the powers that be have divided us. They want us to be divided, but that needs to change, and we will change it. We will continue to fight together.
El dolor, la esperanza, la ansiedad por volver a ver a los jóvenes.
So we have pain, we have hope, we have anxiety to see our children again. We want justice for the crime that was committed, the diabolical crime. What this has caused is there is a new consciousness. A new consciousness has begun in Mexico and in other places. We are here to unite and to say no more.
Bueno, de antemano quiero decirles que esto que yo veo me llena el corazón.
What I would like to tell you is that it fills my heart to see everyone here tonight. This really confirms to us that we are not alone. What I will tell the parents that stayed back in Ayotzinapa is that the people of the United States are just like the people of Mexico. We are the same people.
Gracias por todo lo que ustedes han hecho por nosotros en esta venida a este país.
So I want to say thank you all for being here. Before we came, we were losing hope. And now we know that here, we are very much supported. We know that the people of the United States are with us in our cause. And even though your government continues to be an accomplice in what is happening in Mexico, we know that that is not true of the people.
Queremos decirles que a pesar de que dejamos a la familia,
and I just want to say thank you for all of your support. It really has helped us a lot. This is the last day that we are going to be here in this country, in this empire. And first we want to thank God and we want to thank you for your support.
Muchas gracias a todos ustedes. Al final de este evento, bueno, para nosotros es bien importante. Vivos se los llevaron. Porque vivos se los llevaron. Muchas gracias.
I just want to say thank you so much for all of your support. And one way that you could support us is the comrades here are going to pass around a basket. Any contribution will help for justice, truth. And we are here to say that we will continue to fight until the truth is known, until the people that did this crime are held accountable. And the saying is, they took them alive, they will return alive. Now we will name the 43 students. And after each student's name, we will say presente, which means they are present.
Abel García Hernández, presente. Abelardo Vázquez Penitén, presente. Adán Abraham de la Cruz,
presente.
Alexander Mora Venancio,
presente.
Antonio Santana Maestro,
presente.
Benjamín Asensio Bautista,
presente.
Bernardo Flores Alcaraz,
presente.
Carlos Iván Ramírez Villarreal,
presente.
Carlos Lorenzo Hernández Muñoz,
presente.
César Manuel González Hernández,
presente.
Cristian Alfonso Rodríguez Telumbre,
presente.
Cristian Alfonso Rodríguez Telumbre,
presente.
Cristian Tomás Colón Garnica,
presente.
¿Qué es eso? Cuthberto Ortiz Ramos,
presente.
Dorian González Parral,
presente.
Emiliano Alén Gaspar de la Cruz,
presente.
Everardo Rodríguez Bello,
presente.
Felipe Arnulfo Rosas,
presente.
Giovanni Galíndez Guerrero,
presente.
Israel Caballero Sánchez,
presente.
Israel Jacinto Lugardo,
presente.
Jesús Giovanni Rodríguez Tratempla, la Tempa. Jonás Trujillo González,
presente.
Jorge Álvarez Nava,
presente.
Jorge Aníbal Cruz Mendoza,
presente.
Jorge Antonio Tizapa Legideño,
presente.
Jorge Luis González Parral,
presente.
José Ángel Campos Cantor,
presente.
José Ángel Navarrete González,
presente.
Yosivani Guerrero de la Cruz,
presente.
Yosivani Guerrero de la Cruz,
presente.
Julio César Patolcín López,
presente.
Leonel Castro Abarca,
presente.
Luis Ángel Carrillo,
presente.
Luis Ángel Francisco Arzola,
presente.
Magdaleno Rubén Lauro Villegas,
presente.
Marcial Pablo Barandas,
presente.
Y Emanuel.
Emanuel
Ocutuga.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to voices from the program From Ferguson to Ayotzinapa, a conversation between communities on state violence held at Howard University on Tuesday night. This is 89.3 Jazz and Justice Radio in the nation's capital. We just heard from Anayeli Guerrero de la Cruz, Clemente Rodriguez Moreno, and Felipe de la Cruz Sandoval. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, D.C.'s home care workers are joining fast food workers and other low-wage workers in the national fight for 15. Stay with us.
This is Brother Cornel West, the life of my dear brother, brilliant journalist, intellectual, and political prisoner, Mumia Abu-Jamal, is in great danger. Chronic medical neglect and malpractice by prison staff led to his diabetic shock last week and continued denial of proper health care and diet for his life-threatening illness. Join a national day of action to stop the medical execution of my dear brother Mumia on Friday, April the 10th. Meanwhile, keep calling Pennsylvania officials to demand that he get treatment by specialists of his choosing, the correct diet, and daily visits by his precious family, friends, and attorneys. For details on events near you and phone numbers of officials to call, go to freemumia.com or prisonradio.org or bringmumiahome.com.
Free Mumia, from the hands of the down presser. Free Mumia, free Mumia.
Well, in the windy cold yesterday, D.C. home care workers held a press conference outside D.C.'s Superior Court to bring a lawsuit against a second group of home care agencies with numerous violations of labor laws. And they're continuing on this quest for quality care for their clients and justice. D.C. home care workers will be joining the National Fight for 15 campaign that will have a national day of action next Wednesday, April 15th, Tax Day. D.C.'s action will be held on April 15th at 6 p.m. at the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial. And right now, the People's Champion, Reverend Graylin Hagler, is lined up to be one of the speakers to support low-wage workers across the country. Well, with me today to talk about what D.C. home care workers have experienced and the fight for 15 are two veteran home care workers and D.C. natives, Paula Wilson and Michael Thompson. Hi, welcome. Welcome to On the Ground, Paula and Michael.
Thank you.
All right. Well, in full disclosure, I work with Paula and Michael at 1199 SEIU, the Healthcare Workers Union, and we wish you could have callers today. I expected us to have callers, but we're still having some technical problems with our phones. But okay, we can just have a conversation among ourselves.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. So I want you to both just give me your impressions about why it's important for home care workers to join this fight for 15. You know, we know that there are fast food workers involved. We know that, I think, airport workers, adjunct professors, you know, all types of people who are really seeking that steady, higher wage. So, you know, Michael, then Paula, why do you think it's important for home care workers to join that fight?
Well, the importance of it is that the home care business itself, the health provider, the growth of this area is growing rapidly throughout the country. The means of the baby boomer is overwhelming in numbers. The need to have quality care is very important for the elderly. With that being said, the home care people wages are declining. The business is growing,
mm-hmm,
but the care worker himself is not growing with it for the wages, and it's a must need for the home care aides across the country to join this fight to be acknowledged of the cost of living along with the wages in right. this field.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that since the campaign started last year that a lot of the, you know, we've actually managed to raise the wages because so many agencies in D.C. were not paying the living wage that they were supposed to pay under law. So some people were making $9, $10, and they were supposed to be up
exactly
to like $13.60. So I think a lot of one kind of victory of the campaign so far is that we at least have gotten many home care workers up to that $13.60. But still, some agencies are still like sticks in the mud. They're still actually trying to not pay people. But I think another issue is sick time, but we'll get to that. But Paul, did you want to add some comments about the $15 an hour?
It's absolutely, it's a minimum, actually, you know, compared to what it costs to live in the District of Columbia. Everything has excelled, the cost of living, the price of food, everything has changed, and it's absolutely ridiculous for us to even be sitting here having this conversation on why as though we need a raise, you know. it's pretty much self-explanatory. And to have to constantly bring this issue up before adults, mm-hmm. in the work field, at, you know, themselves, and say this is not enough money to function when we're all having some issues as far as, you know, with the cost of living. I mean, many things. The country's in recession. Many companies had to close down. So for this to be an issue before many Americans today, and definitely in a capital city, is ridiculous. We know that there's a need. And if you can help, I don't see why you would deny it, you know, especially considering that home health care has not had a raise, you know, in a period of years. I'm talking about massive years, like maybe 10 to 15 years they haven't had a raise. At one time, I can report that I was making $8.25, but that was back in the 90s. You know, and then, we had a raise, I think somewhere in the 2000s. I'm not sure. I can't quote word on word what year, but we got another raise and it went up to, I think, 11 or 10 or something like that. And now we're at the point now, over a period of 2 years, where we're receiving, you know, another pay raise for $13.60, but it should have been concurrent. It should have been every year. It should have had some kind of stability. We should have been recognized and not ignored, especially if you are a person that's made of flesh and blood, because you have to be cared for. Especially if you want to continue to live the life that you have. You know, if you want to go out and work and have these nice things, and you have you know, family members at home who are disabled, who need care, and you cannot always attend to them, this should be something that you should have issued in immediately, you know, considering that we need the help for our loved ones. Right. And what do you expect for yourself, you know? Right. Do you expect for somebody to come and give you not only expedient but top-of-the-line care?
You know, I like what Julianne Malvo said at the town hall meeting, mm-hmm. back in March. She said her mother told her, don't bring me a home care worker who's making minimum wage.
Right.
Because they're not mm-hmm. going to be happy. They're not going to treat me right.
Exactly.
And I want to go somewhere where people are well paid and taken care of. I always remember that.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that is a profound statement, because what we have here is that a domino effect. And the domino effect is that if I come in your home and we're saying 9 out of 10, the home is a beautiful home, a nice atmosphere, and I'm working, caring for you, but at the same time, I go home and my bills are 2 months behind. Mm-hmm. My rent is 2 months behind. Because I'm not being acknowledged for the proper care, my profession. And what we're missing here is that the home provider, even though the CNA, the GNA, and the home health care, the HHA, are at the bottom of the totem pole, they are the most valuable piece on the totem pole.
Right.
This is a constant one-on-one contact with the client and the patient.
Exactly.
You're talking about an individual that goes in that deals with a person mentally, spiritually, and physically on a daily basis, and providing the most top-of-the-line care that they can give. Right. You know, you're talking about someone that went to school, had to learn the language of the medical field, come in, utilize what they was taught, and going somewhere home, not just fill out an application and say, I got a job. Mm-hmm. See, you all earned these titles. And when you graduate, you're taking an oath to say that I will give the best care that I can provide for an individual. And you should be compensated for that. Mm-hmm. I mean, the doctor, the RN, the LPN are all compensated. But somewhere down the line, there's a big gap that happened. And the health provider of the home health care is not being compensated.
Right.
There's a greed factor that has came over the city and across the country that's not want to do not want to acknowledge the professionalism of the home care.
So there's that reminds me of two things. So I guess we can go really far into the weeds talking about the Medicaid scandal and
right.
But just to kind of summarize it for our listeners, when the government had the shutdown
right.
in 2013,
right.
it really hurt because the Medicaid payment stopped to agencies,
right.
and then they weren't able to pay workers. So people were unable to get their pay, and people need to get paid. I mean, most of us are living, we're not living that many paychecks away from the street, right?
Exactly.
So that started. And then when the Medicaid fraud investigation happened in early 2014, so many agencies were either shut down, and they also, again, stopped paying people.
Right.
At the same time, telling workers to continue to care for patients. I mean, there
right.
were a variety of different things told to people, but the bottom line is that people weren't paid, and they're still owed back pay for that time
exactly.
and back pay for when they weren't getting paid the living wage.
With interest.
Right? That's right.
Never that, leave that word off.
Put that interest. On my lawsuit with interest, right?
Absolutely.
And also, the fact that people have not been getting overtime and they haven't been getting their paid sick time, and those things add up. So let's talk about sick time, for example. Like right now, very few, if any, home care workers are getting paid sick time. So if you get sick, you have the choice of either going to work sick and making your client sick
exactly.
or staying home and not getting paid.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that, you know, that, see, you know, that's just crazy.
Right.
You know, I mean, you're talking about the medical field.
Right.
You're talking about care. Now,
I don't want anybody coming into my house.
No, you don't.
Exactly.
You know, the thing is the acknowledgement of, you know, these companies hire you. They put, you know, they have their orientation, and they tell you the importance of the care. They talk about universal precaution, but there's no caution towards the home health aid worker. You know, if you get sick, there's nothing stressed on that conversation and orientation. If you get sick, this is what's going to happen for you. You know, all they say, if you get sick, you call in. And some companies say, well, you need to call in 2 weeks in advance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you do that at?
And don't forget, we do all the cooking. That's exciting. What you like? How about that dinner?
Yeah, you know, it's this crazy, you know, for them, you know, to even suggest something like that, you know, and home health care, health people, health providers get sick,
right?
You know, it's a stress. You know, the stress of the work, day in, day out, going from Friendship Hike to Branch Avenue over in Southeast, spending 4 hours here, 4 hours there, and we don't even want to talk about how they cut the hours.
Yeah, they cut the hours you know, down.
You know, they give you a raise.
Give us overtime.
Yeah, they give you a raise, and then they cut your hours.
Mm-hmm.
So you're making the same thing that you made 3 years and 4 years ago.
And I guess that also ties into health insurance.
Right.
So they don't have to provide health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people are trying to cut that, what's it, a 30-hour minimum or something like
right.
that. You know, so all kinds of schemes and games going
right.
on. You know, I know, Michael, that you wanted to talk about the kind of link between, because we've been talking about physical violence a lot, and state violence, and I know you wanted to talk about kind of the idea of how economics can be a violence. The way people are treated, how that creates a violence in people's lives.
Well, you spoke earlier about the shutdown of the Medicaid fraud.
Hmm.
When they did that, what happened was, and we wasn't asked, we was threatened to go to your client. But what they didn't realize is that the integrity of the aides was going to go to work anyway. because they're you know, what the companies don't realize that there's an oath that we take, and the first thing we think about is the well-being of the client.
And you must build a relationship with that person.
Exactly. So with this, when this happened, and the fact that we wasn't going to get paid, well, a lot of us went to work anyway. And these promises of, you know, when this trial is over, we're going to give you our money, we're going to do this. Well, the domino effect of that, a lot of home FAA people lost their homes, families was divided. I'm one of them. Over the course of time, I have lost 3 apartments. You know, when these companies was reopening, to our surprise, our clients was moved to other agencies that was not in effect with the shutdown, and we had to search them agencies out, hoping that we would have a job. You know, the economics of it, having the home FAA being stressed, that caused a domino effect of a
sickness
bunch of
in us.
The sickness and the depression,
anxiety,
and the grief,
worryation, you know.
Yeah.
Many things came up, you know, just the constant terror of having to think on whether or not you were going to be evicted. You know, how were you going to care for your kids, washing clothes, food, transportation if you didn't have a vehicle, and also the paying of your car notes. We had friends who lost their vehicles, whose credit is in jeopardy.
Right.
I mean, not only, you know, with vehicles, but with housing as well. I mean, we suffered every financial blow that you can suffer in this country and in this city. We suffered it,
yeah.
You know, by the hands of our government, who ignored us, right. Who was passive, right. You know, because I feel as though there should have been some kind of dictator over, you know, how the money was spent, how it was distributed, so that we would be secure. We wouldn't have been taken advantage so badly like how we was.
Like a public watchdog.
Yeah, a public watchdog.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. In fact, a lot of us went over to Wage and Means and fill out the forms to see what was going on with our wages.
Right.
And Wage and Means they were zero.
Okay.
They showed up zero. Also, I wanted to speak on this domino effect of the economics of the shutdown was that it caused a lot of misplacement of our own records with these companies. A lot of us had to have to pay again for our license.
Yes, Lord.
Physicals. You know, because there's, you know, we have to have, you know, we have to fall under the universal precaution to make sure that we are germ-free and going into someone's house. So we had to do all this all over again because of the shutdown and the misappropriation of funds. And our own records.
Right. Well, hopefully a lot of those things will be dealt with through the lawsuits in terms of the kind of compensation that people should get. I mean, I hope that you get everything you deserve, every back penny, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there are two things happening. The lawsuits that DC home care workers are, you know, a part of to basically get these back wages, back benefits, but also joining the Fight for 15. So
right.
The next event is this coming Wednesday at 6 p.m. at the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial, a vigil out there. We know Reverend Greeland Hagler will be out there with us. And, you know, we should, you know, it should be a really tremendous event, you know, to in the perfect place, you know. Mm-hmm. So, somebody reminded me yesterday that when, of course, people know that when King was assassinated, he was in Memphis on behalf of the striking sanitation workers.
Right.
But also that in 1963, the March on Washington was for a $2 wage.
Right.
So it was,
exactly.
It was like it was all it was for you know, jobs and justice. Anyway.
Exactly.
Anyway. I want to thank my guests this morning, Paula Wilson and Michael Thompson, and that will do it for me this morning. And I want to thank our engineer, Mike Nocella. We're here in this awesome new space here. And thank you so much for always listening. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can now listen to all of our shows and past shows. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. I'll be hosting the closing reception for my exhibit, Black to the Future, Meditations on Regeneration, at the 410 Good Buddy Art Space this Sunday from 3 to 6 p.m. That's at 410 Florida Avenue Northwest. And that's posted as a public event on Facebook. Now stay tuned for the news, followed by Krista Property on the Thursday edition of Don't Forget the Blues. No, no, that's Steve Hoffman here today for Krista Property. Okay, so raise your voice. Peace.